This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is a return guest. It's been too long since he's been here, so we'll amend that. Stan Krejci of the SK Group. Stan, welcome back to the show.
Delighted to be here with you, Mark.
Thank you so much for coming in, especially because the parking is so darn bad right now. Stan's here because last time he was here, we were talking about his main activity. We're going to talk about that again. Why small businesses should consider or put together a board of advisors. So, Stan, let's start off with your background, if you would, please.
I'm a graduate of Northwestern University. And
ooh. Did you study with Dr. K?
No. I then GW, where I got my MBA when I was in the Navy. And then I've been in the financial arena since leaving the service. My last assignment was as the CFO for Landmark Systems Corporation.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy Clark and Pat McGettigan's firm, which was a software tools development company.
Excellent company.
Yes. And that was purchased by a firm down in Naples, Florida, Allen Systems. When the firm was sold, the firm that had placed me there as the CFO asked whether I would consider executive search. And for the reason that I was a little bit more extroverted than most finance types.
And so yes, you do get out and about.
So I said, sure, let's try it. And I have done that for the last 22 years, first with Boyden and then the McCormick Group. And 5 or 6 years ago, after having my aortic valve replaced at the Cleveland Clinic, I decided life had to be a little less stressful. And if there were stress, it would be self-induced or maybe a little bit for my wife. So I started doing two things that were important to me. One was turning a pro bono service that I did for college students, helping them position themselves for their first job opportunity, and working with people who were looking for their next opportunities, but were not quote-unquote camera ready, as executive search firms like to deal with people who are as close to perfection as possible. And I always felt that we were leaving some people behind because people had not worked with them or told them what were some of the things that they could do to better market themselves. So I started the SK Group 6 years ago with a focus on career consulting, transition consulting, and most importantly, the board of directors consulting services, which I did when I was at the McCormick Group as well. And that's where my focus is. I work with individuals on one side of the equation, helping them position themselves for board service, an idea that is not mine, but was given to me when I was doing some meetings with the Darden School down at UVA, where I was thinking of working with them from a career positioning perspective for some of their college graduates, but they have such a fabulous career outplacement service there. But their head of career placement suggested that I talk to their alums who were successful. They're still entrepreneurially oriented. They had some time on their hands. And they wanted to serve on boards, but they really didn't know how to market themselves for board service. So that's how I started a program where I'm working with individuals to help position them for opportunities that may arise. On the other side of the equation, I work with companies to help them build their boards. And it's usually an advisory board, which is, means non-voting. It's mostly for mid-tier and smaller companies. And I do the entire board building process there. And then for companies that already have boards, whether they're non-voting or voting, I'll do replacement work for a company if somebody has to retire or has reached their 10-year time. And that's the business today.
Okay. We met, we knew each other visually because we'd run across each other at the Tower Club for several years. But I never really knew what you did until we sat down one day. And this, the whole concept of building a board for small companies intrigued me immediately. I had written about it before, but only from, you know, like the 50,000 foot level. Small companies, especially run by techies, need outside advisors. That was the extent of my knowledge until we started talking. So let's start here. Why do some companies stay small or shrink?
Well, I think there are several reasons. The first for why do companies stay small is that the entrepreneurial founder is quite comfortable with the size of the business from a management perspective, but also from a cash generation perspective, and they like the revenue that that can accrue to them particularly, and are less inclined to invest and build in the future. They just are very comfortable with their product or service.
They own a niche.
They have a
niche.
They
know what the cash flow.
Yes, and they're just quite comfortable with it. In today's market, there some companies are in fact shrinking, particularly in the government contracting space, because of the change in the dynamics of contract awarding and the losing of contracts and the competitiveness in the marketplace. So some companies have shrunk in size principally for that reason, and some have shrunk in size because of the unwillingness of the entrepreneurial founder to continue to invest in the future. What's next? Looking way out and seeing how they have to plan for it. What are the investment needs? What are the people needs? What are the equipment needs in order to achieve a new growth perspective for their business?
Yeah, it's especially, you know, if you're a technology firm and you're not, you know, if the founder techie is ensconced in a particular technology, they may become so myopic that they don't know that this technology is becoming sunset, that other things are being added to or surpassing, etc. So how do you talk to those people?
Well, sometimes there's a realization on their part that things aren't moving in the direction that they want to. Those who are comfortable find, and as you say, like to stay the same size they are less interested in having outsiders come in and tell them how to reevaluate their business because of that comfort factor. But those who do want to grow find that they really need the outside expertise that comes with having an advisory board of directors. In other words, surrounding themselves with people who've walked the walk, who are more experienced than they are, who've already built a company. Let's say hypothetically they're a $20 million company and they've built a business that's 50, 100 million or beyond, and understand the roadblocks and the detours that they confront as they build and reevaluate and reshape their business.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center. My guest today is Stan Creechy. You can find Stan at the SKGroup.com, THESKGroup.com. And we'll have more with Stan right after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I misspoke. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Stan Creechy. I misspoke. The website is theskgroupllc.com. T-H-E skgroupllc.com. What are some major management issues facing particularly smaller firms right now? You know, we have the techies in there, and there's all of this back office stuff. There's a, you know, for contractors, there's more regulations about small business than any other type of business in the market. So I know we can't cover everything. So give us tip of the iceberg issues here.
The first issue is that the smaller companies cannot, in many cases, afford the talent of experienced people who have, as I mentioned earlier, walk the walk, have helped other companies build their businesses, grow their businesses, expand the business opportunities, not only in the technical world, but in the financial management arena, the human capital management arena, the marketing communications arena. Those are the areas, and most importantly, in the strategic planning arena. And the beauty of having an advisory board of directors is that you can bring highly talented, experienced people to help you address those issues where you and your collective staff may be, if you're honest, slightly weaker than they should be. But because of the financial constraints, you can't afford to bring in a $250,000 or a $300,000 person. But you can certainly afford to make an investment in a highly qualified advisor. And one of the things that I tell CEO entrepreneurial founders is that an advisory board is probably the best investment that they can make for their future. Granted, it's really an expense to the bottom line, but in terms of the benefits that accrue, it's really an investment in their future.
As long as they assemble the right board.
That's where I come in.
I know. No, you can't have four of your best friends who are in the same rut that you are.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, that you say that, because there are two points that I would make here. One is that who should serve on a board? And the first person who should not, or first people who should not serve on boards, are family and friends. Secondly, your finance and or legal advisors, because you're already engaged. You're already paying them. You can invite them to come to meetings, and you don't want them to take up a seat.
Well, financial and legal advisors, your background aside, tend to be very conservative in spending money or aiming at new growth. Legal's always worried about any repercussions. Finance is always worried about the bottom line in the near term, not necessarily the long term.
That's correct. And so you're looking, the fact is that today, in the post-Enron, post-MCI, WorldCom board environments, is that transparency is a critical issue. And what I see as an interesting trend is that companies are defining the seats that they want to fill. When I work with a company, we talk about, you know, which positions or where do we lack the strength that we need. And so boards today will ask me to find somebody. They could all be from the C-suite, but they all have a skill that they bring to the equation. For example, somebody could be the president of a company, but their original focus in life was human capital management or financial management or strategic planning, MarCom. So they bring a diverse set of skills to the boardroom along with the leadership. I kind of refer to a board, the positions, it's an umbrella, and the umbrella itself is a three-skinned layers. One is leadership, one is financial or fiduciary skills, and the other is governance knowledge. And the handle of the umbrella is the skill. So everybody has the umbrella top that they bring, but what we're looking for is, from a differentiating perspective, is the handle or the skill that they bring. So if you were building a board with individuals, you would have generally the entrepreneurial founder who would be the chair, and then 3 to 5 advisory board members, each with a different skill set.
Okay, no more than 5?
I think for entrepreneurial businesses,
is that still manageable?
3 is really good. Mm-hmm. 5 is not so bad. More than that makes it difficult, because this is not, board members today are not just coming to a board meeting every other month or once a quarter or every month. They are engaged really almost 24/7 today. They go to board meetings, they're on a committee, they might be a strategic project they're working on. There's preparation work that needs to be done. A good CEO will, a chair will spend time talking on the telephone with these advisors, asking them for advice outside of the board meeting. So it's a much more busy environment than just going to a regular meeting. So you have to make a commitment to board service.
Okay. So outside of putting together a board, are there other reasons? Well, let me ask this a different way. For smaller firms, you have all of those infrastructure issues. Do you recommend outsourcing, you know, the HR, the accounting, that sort of thing, to companies like Insperity, say?
The answer is maybe.
Okay.
Because it depends, or maybe the better answer is it depends.
Okay.
On what the talent that you have and the complexity of your organization. Sometimes it is better to outsource that. And then when you reach a certain revenue goal and a certain employment population, then it may make sense to bring some of those services inside. So it again depends on the size of the company.
Mm. Okay, so If the company is founded by a techie, let's say, I know several companies that were founded by former govies. They have an in at a particular agency. They bring a half a dozen of their friends together. They're all tech heads. Nobody has HR. Nobody has accounting. Nobody has, you know, CEO skills. So there's basically no adult supervision.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the late 90s, early 2000s, the entrepreneurial founders were less inclined to surround themselves by people with white hair, i.e. the experience of having built businesses. And as you know, a lot of companies imploded around that period of time.
Oh, yeah.
So a big change that I've seen in the last 15 years is the interest of entrepreneurial founders, just like you say, who have a real technical background but lack certain other skills, trying to surround themselves with people who have those skills. And the important thing is not people who have skills in a business their size, let's say it's a $20 million company, but skills from having built a company from $20 million, as I mentioned earlier, into something much larger, so that they can help guide and suggest to an entrepreneurial founder how to move to the next step. What are the ramifications of that growth, and how to consolidate that through their strategic planning process, working with the different elements within the business, because all of those elements have to work effectively and well together for success.
Okay, so that brings up kind of an interesting point. At what size, dollar-wise or employee size, should a company consider assembling a board or bringing in any sort of outside advice?
My personal opinion is that the entry point is around $10 million for an advisory board, and the building of that board is a exercise of training and sharing and listening to an entrepreneurial founder talk about what his or her aspirations are for the business. But that's a great time because they're just right. There's just enough cash flow in order to pay a retainer. Mm-hmm. And the boards that I build, I believe everybody should be compensated for the work that they need to do. And so that's a part of their budget development process. And it's at that break point that they can begin to afford a fair compensation retainer for the services that are going to be provided by these people. As I say, it's the least costly form of consulting you're going to get by having an advisory board member, because, for example, a $10 million company might be paying an advisor $20,000 a year. A lot of consultants charge half that amount every month, for example,
or quarter of that. If I were on retainer, it wouldn't be $20,000 for the year.
Right.
not to say I won't, consider boards, but I've only sat on a few anyway. And they are interesting, but that brings a slightly other different spin. You said three of the major items for boards were leadership, financial, and governance. What about the ability of board members to provide that extra layer of introductions, the relationships that they've built? Is that part of the package?
Yes, and that's a very good question or a point, Mark, because the board, there are two types of advisory boards: governance advisory boards and business development advisory boards. I'm more inclined to help corporations build governance boards so that they run and operate just as if they were a voting board, except they don't vote. They have all the disciplines of a voting board of directors: board books, agendas, minutes, committees, strategic projects, regularly scheduled meetings, generally 18 months out in advance, an annual strategic planning offsite. But underlying your point is the fact that every board member is making an investment themselves of time in that business. They learn that business, and they are absolutely willing and ready to introduce the company to potential new business opportunities, to open doors, to introduce them to other leaders, other decision makers. And that is a crucial point. But they are not there to they are not the business developers.
Right.
The business developers are on staff, and they're the ones who are responsible for, once the door is opened, perhaps by the board member, of walking in with the board member, maybe the CEO, and selling the business. But the responsibility passes to the internal staff at that point. I find that a pure business development board, and a lot of banks have just business development advisory boards. They have a big board in the sky at headquarters, but then the regional banks will have, or the regional offices will have, advisory boards. Those are principally business development boards. But it's hard to ask a entrepreneurial C-suite person who's serving on your board to help you focus just solely on business development, because they're doing that for their own business.
Okay. We're going to take a break right now. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Stan Krejci. You can find Stan at the SKGroupLLC.com. You can also find them on LinkedIn if you want. Shoot them an email at stan.krejci, K-R-E-C-J-I, @gmail.
K-R-E-J-C-I.
Oh, I got it backwards again. Sorry. I have it spelled right here and wrong here. K-R-E-J-C-I, stan.krejci @gmail.com. Just look them up on LinkedIn. The composition of the board becomes key. What about peers from other companies like yours?
I find that having people who are your peers are probably not the right direction to go, because they're experiencing the same issues of growth and management that you are.
So you're going to have a moan and groan session, not a productive session.
Right. So what you're looking for are people who have already been where you are. And when you bring up the issue, they'll say, well, you know, way back when we did it this way, and we might suggest that you take that tack versus the one that you were considering because. And I think you get better value from surrounding yourself by people who have already built successful businesses that are generally multiples of five times the size of your current company. So I, for a $20 million company, I'm always looking for people who've worked for a company that has $100 million or more of revenue, because they've experienced the growth. And at each stage of growth, there are new issues and problems that you confront that need the kind of advice that more experienced advisors can bring to the equation.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So let's get specific then. What types of advisors, let's say the company's $15 million, they've got, we're talking companies in the government market, so pretty much, not totally unique set of circumstances, but definitely different circumstances from B2B and B2G. So give me your criteria for who should be there.
Well, first, as I mentioned previously, is we need to define the seats. You know, is it a financial management seat? Is it a strategic planning seat? Is it a CTO, CIO seat? In other words, we're going to look for people with that experience from a company that's five times bigger in growth than yours, but we're going to look for people who are in your field. In other words, if you're a government contractor, we want you to have a financial management person filling that seat who has worked in the government contracting space and understands all the rules and regulations and accounting activities and requirements.
Those are where the landmines are.
Exactly, and can help you move at a much faster, more efficient, cost-effective pace as a result of that. So what I'm looking for is not somebody who's a consultant, but somebody who has actively filled one of those roles from a corporate perspective. They could have filled those roles and then moved into the consulting world, but I really like the background of a board member to be from the quote-unquote field itself.
Okay, cool. Okay, so we have the financial, we have the governments, we have the leadership. Are there any other components missing? I mean, let me phrase this a different way. So you have the board. Other positions may not necessarily be board positions. That's when you consider consultants.
That's correct. You may have a board member is going to provide you, at the minimum, a year's worth of value. And that value can be renewed on an ongoing basis. And the reason I say a year is because when we're putting together the duties and responsibilities document and we define the term of board service, for entrepreneurial businesses, I like to say that it's 1 year renewable based on the needs of the company. Because as over the course of the year, an entrepreneurial company can change and its needs may change with it. And that may necessitate bringing in somebody with experience in a different field that can provide significant value to the company. And so a board member could conceivably be excused from service because they want to replace it with somebody with from a different field of expertise.
Or a different size company if you experience extraordinary growth.
Exactly. You may want to add some additional board members, or you may want to upgrade the experience factor of a particular board member. A consultant, to me, is somebody who's fulfilling a short-term need for the company and can do his or her consulting in a finite period of time versus something that's ongoing for a year or more. Now, some consultants do, and that's fine. But I'm just basically saying one is more short-term and one is more long-term.
Right. I mean, I've had some consulting gigs that have run 36 months, some slightly less and some radically less, you know, anywhere from a couple of months to 3 years. But that's probably why the board thing has eluded me. I have a lot of contacts in the market, but I have one particular skill set, and it's usually one that that they'll want a staff person on full time sooner rather than later, and that's the marketing function. Mm-hmm. But again, the experience factor there for me mentoring those people is critical.
Yes, and I think that's, and in both cases, by the way, Mark, I see that that's one of the values that accrues to the company. And the reason I like to have 2 to 3 strategic projects that the board is working on, and that is and each project is chaired by an independent director, is that they can bring in consultants, they can use their own staff for training and experience development in working with an outside who has had knowledge and expertise in the field that they're working in, but they haven't reached that degree of expertise yet. So a good board member will mentor in-house staff and also incorporate, when necessary, the outside consultant. For example, the audit committee is going to include the inside finance person or people and the auditor firm, and they'll work collectively and cohesively on behalf of the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to give you an example of something that's not board worthy, but certainly consulting worthy, I've done a lot of coaching on social media, particularly LinkedIn. I've had 2 clients now with engagements over a year long, just teaching their rather large staffs everything they need to know about LinkedIn. That's not a board seat.
No, but LinkedIn is probably the best of the social media out there. Search firms use LinkedIn. HR departments use LinkedIn. It's a great way to market your own company, but at the same time, it's a great way to find highly talented people, better than any other.
Them. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's the key.
Yeah. So, all right, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Stan Krejci. Stan will be joining me after this break. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Stan Krejci. You can find Stan at the SKGroupLLC.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. Last name Krejci, Stan Krejci. And I suggest you do so because if you're a small business owner and you have not considered a board, number one, thank you for listening to the show, but get in touch with Stan. Get some adult supervision. Get some ideas flowing about what you need to grow. So and so they can find you. How do they find the advisors? How do you help them find their advisors?
Well, once we've defined the seat definition as a part of my services, I actually go out and find candidates who meet the profiles that the entrepreneurial founder, for example, or the professional CEO have defined, and I also solicit from the company itself people whom they might be interested in considering and put them into my process. I usually submit between 5 and 8 candidates per seat, and then and those candidates come from perhaps from CEOs with whom I'm working with to promote for board service, from my network of being here in town for 40 plus years.
Yeah, you know a few people.
A few people who have expressed interest in boards. And then if it's a challenging seat, I'll give you an example. Somebody asked me, they wanted a person with an experience in medical devices to be one of their board members. And I knew nothing about medical devices, so that was an exciting search for me because
at our age, that's a good thing to say, though.
Yes, yes. But I went, for example, to the FDA, to the medical devices division. They told me the top 10 companies that produce medical devices. I called all the CEOs of those companies. Interesting sidebar to this is that when I call and say to anybody, the administrative assistant or whoever answers the phone, I have a paid board opportunity that I'd like so-and-so to consider, it's a call that's returned before the end of the day.
There you go.
So I searched, and I actually found a CEO who outside of the Washington, D.C. area, who was the president of a medical devices firm, who was interested in serving on their advisory board. So it's a combination of my outsourcing. And then what we do is then we narrow the field down via paper from 8, let's say 5 to 8, to 3 per seat, and then we do face-to-face interviews. The CEO does those face-to-face interviews. I stay out of it. We come back together again and evaluate, and then narrow it down again to the final 2 candidates per seat, and then we ultimately make the decision on who they're going to bring to the boardroom.
Do you coach the CEO on the types of questions to ask?
I generally prepare a list of questions that I started with a base that probably had 10 and is now, through the CEOs with whom I've worked, it's now about 25 questions. I ask them to select 4, and if it's more than one person, each one of those people to select 4 questions and ask those same 4 questions of every candidate so that they really can compare apples to apples.
Right. Cool. All right. So you've got this entire process. How did you vet your, number one, I could show you how to find medical devices people, executives on LinkedIn with government experience. There's ways to do everything on LinkedIn.
It's yeah, you're really absolutely cool. Right. It is. It's an enormously important and helpful tool today.
So how did you vet this?
Well,
guy?
It's very important on both sides of the equation that the candidates do their due diligence and vet the company, and vice versa, the company vets the candidates. So I prepare my candidates to know that they are in fact going to be vetted. I vet them. I never submit anybody that with whom I've not met in advance. Do some reference checking if I don't know them, and put together a bunch of material that we submit to the company: their resume, bio, vision statement, references, and so on that the company has. But I ask the company then to turn around and do due diligence on the individual, background checks and so on. So a candidate should not go in ill prepared. I try to prepare them. They get a folder of material from the company. They sign an NDA. They get more and more involved. They get more and more information about the company. It's interesting that the candidate still is the final decision maker. They can say yes or no that I want to continue with the process and or no, I've learned too much about the business. I don't think I can give them the kind of expertise and time that they deserve.
Or if is this a factor, they are a great fit for advising the company, they just don't get along with the CEO.
Well, that's the beauty of the process, and that is that when I submit the candidates, they're all qualified, they all meet the profile, but it's when you get to the face-to-face, then we get into the look and feel, the comfort. No board should be built with people who are in opposition to the CEO. That doesn't mean that they don't have strong opinions that they're willing to express, but what you need is a collaborative, collegial board for forward progress.
Yeah. If you can't play together, you're not going to produce
nothing happens.
Good stuff. Yeah. I know we've touched on this briefly before, but go back in just for a moment on the compensation side of things. What kind of expense should a company expect to have to do to get the right board?
Well, I'm a great believer that everybody needs to have a cash incentive to do the job that they should do. If the company doesn't feel the pain of writing the check, or the individual doesn't get compensated for the time, it just doesn't work. So I, as I mentioned earlier, for a small company, a $10 million company, I think it's a $20,000 a year fee, and you can attract highly talented people because they care. They're entrepreneurially oriented, and they're willing to make the investment. So the compensation packages vary as the company gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So it can be part cash, it can be part stock or stock options or phantom stock. They can be deferred compensation elements. But as the bigger and bigger the company, so a Fortune 500 company might be paying one of their advisors, their directors, $200,000, $300,000 a year in cash and benefits and stock and so on. So it's a factor of size that determines. But I think everybody has to have some skin in the game. And my 20 years of board building has demonstrated that those boards are the most successful.
Well, I would equate it to hosting a free event. Half the people that sign up for a free event won't show. And half of those who do attend figure it's free. I'm not really going to get much out of this.
That's correct. You know, it's the old Pablo Casals when he was, I think, the conductor of the Barcelona Symphony. He said, before he left Spain for Puerto Rico, he said that everybody has to pay, even the people in the cheapest seats, even if it's 25 cents. They have to feel that they are invested in the enterprise or the experience. And I feel the same way about a board member and the company. They have to have an investment in each other for success.
If I could see Pablo Casals for 25 cents, I'd be there every day. Stan, thank you so much for coming in. Stan Krejci. Again, you can find Stan at www.theskgroupllc.com. Look him up on LinkedIn. Reach out and connect. His services aren't going to be free to you, but if you need a board of advisors, this is the place to go. This is AmTower Off-Center. This is not my day job. I advise companies on the marketing side of business-to-government, government contracting, and I also advise companies, particularly contractors, on leveraging LinkedIn. So give me a shout. You can find me on LinkedIn easily, or just shoot me a line, markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.